Welcome to the CDH Conversations podcast, in which we'll be speaking about the inherent requirements of the job defense and reasonable accommodation. With you today is Khudisha Pashe, an associate at Cliff Decker Hofmeyr. Quite recently, the Constitutional Court decided the case of Adam Damons versus the City of Cape Town, where an employee firefighter who was injured at work and sustained a disability as a result of the employer's non-compliance with health and safety regulations sought position as a senior firefighter but was inhibited by the employer's fire and rescue advancement policy. This case raised important questions relating to unfair discrimination in the workplace. And it also raised the place of inherent requirements of the job in the scope of reasonable accommodation. Now, joining me today is Fiona Le Pen, a director in our employment law department at CDH. Fiona, thank you so much for your time to discuss not only the outcome of this case that we'll be looking at, but the direction that our law seems to be taking, particularly in the relation of the scope of reasonable accommodation. Before we dive into the discussion and look at the legal principles, could you please enlighten us a bit more about the facts and backgrounds of this case, Fiona?
Thank you, Khadishu. It will be a pleasure to do so. So this case arose in the City of Cape Town's Fire and Rescue Department, and that's where the applicant, Mr. Damons, was employed as a firefighter back in 2001. And he completed all his courses. He was an extremely diligent employee, and he became eligible for promotion to the position of a senior firefighter. That was back in 2008. But in 2009, the employer, being the city, introduced this fire and rescue advancement policy, and all career mobility was going to be managed in terms of that policy to basically get rid of inconsistent employment practices which had occurred previously. But this is an important aspect because in terms of that policy, physical fitness was set out as an inherent requirement of the job for an operational firefighter. And the city didn't have other positions to accommodate the applicant after he suffered this really nasty accident where he was permanently disabled. And this is where the fight really came to the fore, because his application to be promoted as a senior firefighter was blocked because of the application of this policy. You had to have this physical fitness and be assessed at that level. And he was never going to attain that. And so his argument was the policy was inherently discriminatory against him because he would never be able to overcome that stricture. But before it reached the Constitutional Court, the matter had an illustrious history in litigation, which I think my colleague would like to just chat about.
Yeah, thanks, Fiona. This matter really began, as you explained, the City of Cape Town was an employer and the employee, Mr. Damon, was seriously injured while he was working. So Mr. Damon referred an unfair labor practice dispute to the South African Local Government Bargaining Council in 2014. Now, the arbitrator indicated dissatisfaction about Mr. Damon's treatment and the city's attempts at alternative accommodation of him as a disabled employee, but also found that the city had raised a defense of inherent requirements of the job. Now, because of that, the council was of the view that they lacked the jurisdiction to decide that aspect of the dispute, which meant that the council decided to refer such a dispute to the Labour Court. Now, before the Labour Court, the primary question was whether applying the policy to Mr. Damons in a way that prevented him from advancement due to his disability constituted unfair discrimination. Now, that's what we're going to be looking at. That's the crux of this matter. And in answering that question, the court found that such an act did, in fact, amount to unfair discrimination in terms of Section 6(1) of the Employment Equity Act. Because of such a judgment, the city appealed to the Labour Appeal Court, and the court essentially found in the city's favour now, especially in light of the city's defence of the inherent requirements of the job. It accepted that physical fitness was in fact an inherent requirement of the job as a firefighter, as one would understand. It further accepted that Mr. Damons could not be pronounced physically fit then, and the application of the policy prevented him from advancing. So this is the important thing that we'll be looking at. After this appeal, Mr. Damon went ahead and sought leave to appeal at the Constitutional Court. And it was at this point that this matter found itself on Constitutional Hill.
That's quite right, Khadishu. The primary issues, as you've indicated, was the question of unfair discrimination on disability grounds in the workplace, the inherent requirements of the job defence, and reasonable accommodation. Where does that fit in to this equation? And there was fierce debate between the two judgments, especially on that question of the reach of reasonable accommodation.
Yes, Fiona, and it's very interesting how in this judgment, we have two judgments, one by Justice Majid, which represented the majority, and a solo dissent by Justice Pillay. And these two judgments really provide different perspectives, but things that are very, very important to our jurisprudence.
Yes, in fact, both judgments did allow for leave to appeal. So that was the first hurdle that had to be crossed. But the majority dismissed the appeal on the grounds that the question of that broader-based reasonable accommodation analysis, which was canvassed in such great detail by the dissenting judge, hadn't been pleaded by the parties. Now, your pleadings are central to any litigation in which you're involved. And manifestly, what had been Mr. Damon's ambition was to be a senior firefighter. And he'd articulated that as much in his statement of claim in the Labour Court. But that course of action changed during the course of pre-trial proceedings, because the accommodation advancement or promotion to other lines of employment then implied that Mr. Damons was no longer seeking appointment as a firefighter only because he didn't meet the inherent requirements of the job, but expected his employer to develop a work stream and a development stream to accommodate the disability that he said it had caused. So in these circumstances, although it was an emotionally compelling argument before the dissenting bench, they reckoned that that was irrelevant to the legal analysis at issue. The issue before the court, said the majority, was actually whether the employer had unfairly discriminated against Mr. Damons by refusing to waive the physical assessment requirement contained in the policy itself. That was the guiding prescript. It held that the case had to be decided as pleaded, and where that had not taken place properly, the applicant's failure to set up a career path for himself in a non-operational role is not something that could be placed at the door of the employer. And the majority held that the defence of the inherent requirements of the job provided for in Section 6 of the EEA, as you rightly pointed out, Khadishu, was absolutely unassailable. On the question of reasonable accommodation, what did the majority hold? They said that the minority judge misinterpreted that interplay between reasonable accommodation and the inherent requirements of the position, found that in terms of the applicable statutory framework, reasonable accommodation is aimed at allowing employees to do the job for which they were employed to do. In other words, Mr. Damon's position as a firefighter. And so, an obligation to reasonably accommodate the employee would arise in situations where it would be necessary for the employee to fulfill the minimum requirements of the position. If it went any further than that, then that doctrine of reasonable accommodation would unreasonably require employers to employ individuals who simply cannot perform the job at hand. And it said that that was too onerous in these circumstances.
Yes, Fiona, and I would definitely agree with that. I actually think that the majority judgment did really solidify some core issues in our law. However, I actually found the view canvassed by the dissent quite interesting, actually. Essentially, Justice Pillay argued that the underlying purpose of reasonable accommodation is to promote substantive equality and eliminate discrimination, which is true. Accordingly, employers bear positive duties to promote equality by eliminating unfair discrimination in the workplace. And even if an employer has undertaken reasonable accommodation of an employee, the employer still has the duty to eliminate unfair discrimination in its premises and workplace. And the dissent also argued that reasonable accommodation requires a genuine effort to remedy disadvantage and enable equality of opportunities and remuneration and parity of participation. And also, it must be tailored individually and on a case-to-case basis. Right now, this duty further cannot fall away simply because the employer has successfully raised the defense of inherent requirements of the job. Now, she further emphasized that the fact that the employee was injured on duty, and this came to the idea that the duty of reasonable accommodation owed to an employee is greater in this instance. Now, it was very interesting to note that the final challenge to the majority, Justice Pillay in her dissent argued that irrespective of how the applicant pleaded the case, the principle of reasonable accommodation required that the respondent explore ways of accommodating him beyond his current position. And this goes against really what you said, Fiona, that our law's position is that the judge should only deal with what is pleaded. Going forward, we should actually look at where this takes our jurisprudence.
I think, Kadisha, you've really touched on the main point. And one has to ask whether the Labour Court, as well as our Labour Appeal Court, didn't perhaps look too finely at what is meant by reasonable accommodation and the duty of the employer in that regard, because even the code under the Employment Equity Act says that employers should reasonably accommodate the needs of persons with disabilities. The aim of the accommodation is to reduce the impact of the impairment of that person's capacity to fulfill the essential functions of a job. I think that is saying you go beyond the job for which, for example, Mr. Damons was employed as a firefighter. But I go back to your point that we've got a difficulty with the pleadings in this case. So I would say this, the majority certainly didn't close the door to the dissenting judge's arguments about the extent and scope of reasonable accommodation, simply that in this case, the way in which the matter had been pleaded didn't allow for that exploration. Because you might say, well, why did the dissenting judge seem to go left field and almost ignore this issue in the pleadings? And she said, well, if you look at how the cross-examination of Mr. Damons was managed in the Labour Court, it was absolutely obvious that the employer knew exactly what it was that Mr. Damons was fighting about. He wanted a career, and he wanted a career that could manage his disability, not necessarily as a firefighter, but as something else. Now, that change in his approach, according to the dissenting judge, was good enough to get him past the hurdle of his pleadings. But the majority said, no, 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 no. You don't stray from how you've pleaded your matter.
Thanks for that, Fiona. And in closing, I think something that I found quite interesting was how the majority also said or cautioned against determining matters out of pity. Majority emphasized the importance of pleadings in litigation. And I guess this goes to everybody listening to the podcast that pleadings are very important in any matter. And the courts really look at those and try their best not to look at it, any external factors. Well, thank you, Fiona. That brings us to the end of our conversation today. Thank you for your discussion.
Thank you to you and for the opportunity, Khadisha.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.